where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
We're live.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board, S&P Futures. We'll have those in a second. We're getting computer. Computers are slow. Maybe it's the rain. What do you think?
Absolutely.
But the big news in Chicago over the weekend is the tragic passing of Bulls legendary broadcaster and player Stacey King. S&P Futures are up there. We're actually buying the dip here a little bit after Friday's total fiasco in the market. But Stacey King died yesterday, and I'm going to say, Jimmy, it's not like I think Matt Weber knew him somewhat because his work with the score. S&P Futures up 27, NASDAQ Futures up 217. I don't know of anybody, well, there's a few, but never a bad word said by anybody from the dude in 59 years, about the dude in 59 years. And just an enthusiastic, good guy. And, well, you don't see too many of that around, do you?
No, you don't, Chief. It's true. I mean, he played on the first three-peat of the Bulls from 91 to 93. Then, strangely enough, he was traded to the Timberwolves for Luke Longley, who played the other three.
Yeah.
But he pretty much did make a nice career there as a broadcaster.
A pretty good career as a player. Probably not as what you would necessarily expect, considering coming out of Oklahoma, he was a huge star.
But he played for a couple of teams after. He only played 8 seasons.
What'd you do to yourself over there?
Ouch. He only played 8 seasons.
Yeah. Which is obviously enough for a pension, so all that stuff. And then he coached, and then he became playoffs. He had 61 playoff games, 2 starts, almost 12 minutes a game. He was definitely a contributor. Played 438 games. That's a lot. 38 career starts. Played for the Bulls, the Wind Timberwolves, the Miami Heat, the Mavericks, and the Boston Celtics. But really made him, a household word here. Really was the broadcasting, and everybody loved the guy. I mean, just and he was a Bull through and through, no question about that. And I heard rumors of a fall of some kind, but nobody seems to know, or doesn't really matter. I mean, when you see that at age 59, you immediately assume, some kind of an accident or a heart attack, but anyway, genuine, Betty Weber, I haven't talked to him in a while, and it's just really devastating. I mean, everybody on the score loved the guy. Anyway, it's where, but the market, just as a review, we're talking about a segue, on Friday, it was just absolute devastation. I mean, the NASDAQ was down 1,100 points. It's over 4%. And the S&P was down 2.6. Sort of interesting, the few things we've been talking about on the show, not that we're predictive, just that people felt that the market was kind of high, in terms of some stocks, definitely was, and you saw some anecdotal crap, like the guy we said that the last time a week ago Friday that the S&P had made an all-time high with only 20 stocks in the S&P making an all-time high was right before the crash in 2000, which is not stuff you really want to hear, but it's also stuff you really can't trade on. I mean, there's a lot of, people will, you'll see an article about, last time market crashed, last time, Jim Lawler had to wait for 4 trains on the Brown Line. You go, okay, well, let's somewhat anecdotal. I mean, we don't know that it's predictive necessarily. Actually, there's a kind of a school in mathematics with the I don't know if I should segue into this, Jimmy, real quickly, because we want to talk a little about our Cubs and the White Sox. But the when people do have done technical analysis forever, and of course when I went to the University of Chicago, and they were the first place. Now a lot of places have it. I know Indiana really does. Russell talks about they were the first place they actually have a full history of the New York Stock Exchange going all the way back. You know, God knows how long. Upticks, downticks, every trade that was pretty much ever done. They were the first place that really put it together, and that's where you saw, like, the random walk theory, and they actually became a what? They called it a sub-martingale or whatever the hell it was. Everybody, you see, technical analysis, they'll talk about a banner, they'll talk about a double top, they'll talk about the, there's all kinds of stuff, the rising flag, and I don't know that stuff all that well, but the interesting point is the people, the University of Chicago, of course, piled every uptick, downtick in history and computers and study every which way but sideways. And they came out and they said that you actually did have double tops, you did have all the stuff that the technical people talked about, but that at no point, but it was, what's the term? It was like historical. You could look back and say, wow, look, there was a double top, or there was a pennant, or whatever the different formations they have. But nowhere could you use a computer to predict when you were in the double top and when it was going to end. So, yeah, they did form, but not enough to where you could say, I'm definitely in one now. But you could look back 2 weeks and say, ah, that was a double bottom type of thing. So, anyway, that's kind of what mathematics can do, to mess with your brain as well as other stuff. But the other one, another one of the anecdotal things we had been talking about was, you know, partly war, partly trade policy, all that stuff. Is the Japanese yen, whenever they make it to 160, the Japanese government kind of goes into a hissy fit and says that's too much and starts buying the yen to bring the yen back up. Now again, for those that I've said it a couple times, the yen is get a two-edged sword here, because they are buying oil that is now higher in price because of our shenanigans in the Middle East. Like them or don't like them, that's what's caused oil to go up like this. They, for the Japanese, they have to buy dollars and then buy oil with the dollars. That's the way the oil market works. So they did that, but when it gets to 160, they sort of panic. And they buy the, now this is 160 yen to the dollar. So if it goes to 161, yen's not going up, it's going down. So always remember that. So when it gets to 160, that's kind of their flashpoint. Now, the last time they did it a couple weeks ago, they had to sell some U.S. treasuries to get the dollars to buy the yen. All right, now that's a problem, because since China and us don't get as long like we used to, despite Trump saying that Xi is the greatest guy and he loves him. Fact is, China's dropped their investments in U.S. treasuries, and Japan and Britain have pretty much picked up the drop. Well, if Japan has to start selling some of those off, of course, the interest rates might sneak up here. And that was really the big issue on Friday after the labor number. The 10-year shot up to 4.5, almost 4.54, and the 30-year didn't go up as much, but it closed at like 4.999, so like right at 5%. And that was one of the problems. So Japan had to do that. Plus, we've talked on the show a lot about, you know, what about Bitcoin? And Bitcoin, if it's, it has a massive chunk of wealth was in it. It probably got to $3 to $3.5 trillion at its peak. And now it's roughly half of that, because Bitcoin's about half of its top price. And if that drops another half a trill or a trill, you know, what happens? You know, I'm talking these trills around like if they're nothing. And you have places like MicroStrategy, which is now up today, because I'm going to guess, I will look right here, crypto has made a bounce back to 63,000. Below 60,000, it's a problem. So both of those things sort of happened on Friday. So that's one of the reasons. But now you have, you know, big bounce backs. Micron was down over $100. Now it's up 45 today. Why people have decided to buy it there, you know, but that's been the mantra. And we have several clients that use our electronic platforms, and they've been, I'm going to say, very successful over the last years of buying the dip. And whenever it looks lousy, they buy more or sell puts or do something. You know, that's what they do. I mean, that's they're electronic. They don't ask us for advice, and that's fine. That's what that's all for. But that's the mantra. And you know what? You can't argue with it, because really, since 2007, when have you not wanted to buy the dip, Jimmy? Every time, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you got an endemic or epidemic, whatever you want to call it, COVID, and yet we come out higher at the end. We've got a war going on now with seemingly no end.
Well, Trump did say, hey, you guys got to stop shooting at each other.
Yeah, well, I mean, he says a lot, you know.
The other interesting news is, if you didn't know, according to the Department of War, if you're a Mormon, you are not a Christian, according to Hegseth.
Ah. Yeah, Hegseth's running around now telling people what religions are really religions.
Exactly.
Where did we find this guy, for God's sake?
Fox News.
Well, that's it's
Fox News. Come on,
it's terrific. Hey, and
the possible governor of California, Fox News.
Yeah. It's a strange world. Hey, for those that don't really know or necessarily see the difference between the one percenter and the rest of yous and the rest of us, take a look at these Knick tickets for tonight in New York in a Madison Square Garden. 15,000, 14,000, 12,000. One near the court, 16,000, 23,000. Cheap seats, 13,000, 11,000. If any, I mean, it's hard for a regular person, and I certainly include myself in that, to even understand how much wealth some people have with what's going on with the market and in some of the properties, and what inflation has done to. What did Larissa say 2 weeks ago? Even the bottom half of the top K are starting to crumble.
Yeah.
But it's only the top of the K now. I mean, who the hell can be buying tickets for $17,000 for a basketball game?
A billionaire.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people that, I mean, they can't wait to get the Trump $250 bill so you can light your cigar with that, right? To show that the only schmucks are lighting theirs with a $100 bill.
Oh, that's true. Well, the Knicks game is on tonight, correct?
Yeah.
And the president will be there, and New York is not happy.
Oh, no, no.
He could get booed.
Oh, I think he will get booed.
But he can't get booed. He's the president.
Yeah, that's right. Well, but anyway, those are kind of the stories. The war seems to what war seems to wage on. We said it's not a war because of the. But now this Bitcoin's a problem. I mean, how big of a problem? Nobody seems to know, but I mean, why people are buying this MicroStrategy today? You know, maybe you're right, but boy, oh boy! I mean, I don't know. It's leveraged Bitcoin, and it's just crazy stuff. And Alphabet is seeking fresh capital. These guys now want. This is Google, by the way.
Yes.
These guys are looking for what, $80 billion or some massive number.
$80 billion.
Well, I mean,
come on, Chief. I only have about $200 billion in cash.
Yeah.
I can't spend my $80 billion.
Yep.
I need to have other people pay for that.
The now they're 85. Increased the original number by $5 billion. And if anybody doesn't think that that's an issue, in the stock and things like that, I don't understand why people are not concerned, but they aren't, because it just goes up.
Well,
and I.
Speaking of that, I'm just glazing through Google here, reading through, that the LIV might not have enough funds. That was the Saudi back who decided that they don't want to back this thing anymore.
Yeah.
And now, all of a sudden, so where are these players going to go? Back into the PGA.
I don't see how the PGA can tell them they can't come in. What kind of a monopoly are they?
They were a serious monopoly until that was started, and then they jumped off.
I'm not big on these monopoly things.
Well, they're really in golf. I mean, you have the PGA, in the United States. I don't know what you have in Europe, but they probably have their own association out in Europe and in Asia. But the PGA clearly is the top dog, and you know, the sides figured, hey, I'll throw $5 billion at it. I'll sign a couple guys to outrageous contracts, and we'll see what happens.
But I never could quite understand why, if you go there, you can't. You're not welcome here anymore. What's it any of their business if you go play somewhere else in some tournaments?
I don't know, but I think the PGA will allow. They're going to want the guys back. I feel sorry for the guys that just, you know, like John Rahm and a few others that hopped over to last year, because they're going to get nothing on the rest of their contracts with the LIV.
Well, some of them, they want money back.
I would.
No, I'm talking about the LIV tour.
Yeah.
Because they gave them all this money up front.
They did. Yeah.
Where are those guys playing? Like golf courses in Saudi Arabia and stuff?
No, they do play. They play all over. They do play at the Doral, Bedminster. You know, give you a few. Trump Properties somehow has landed a couple of these events. And
was this before or after the statue?
Well, it was before the statue. Now, does the statue move with each tournament?
No, I don't think so. I think it's stuck at the it's at the Doral.
And we have John on the line.
We have who, John? Which John?
Flanagan.
Flanagan, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How about you?
Doing all right. Kind of bumming a little bit about Stacey King, like half the city.
Yeah, was he only 50-something, wasn't he?
59.
Yeah, it was. That's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You don't normally get a whole lot of really good people that nobody services a bad word about, nice family and a whole bit, and 59's kind of young.
I know, it's chilling. It was, but yeah, it's a real loss, I think, for fans and for the Bulls.
Well, plus it's a yet another reminder that tomorrow is promised to nobody, right?
Yeah,
which
really
nobody
true.
Really wants to hear, and interesting, one of my people I talked to up at the Tripoli has kind of a different view of life. Guy's 79, he goes, yeah, I figure I only got about 12 really good years left, and then I'll probably have to start worrying about where I live and stuff. And I'm thinking, gee, the dude's giving himself to 91, totally independent. I hope he's right. I
mean, a lot of people younger than that have already been there.
we've already cashed it in. Right. But I got about 12 to 14 like really good independent years left, and I'm going, wow, it's
at least he's planning ahead.
That's yeah, it's you know, got from your lips to God's ear. The crazy. What do you make of the fact that some people are in buying all these stocks today, Jamie? I mean, it's you know, we've seen Micron has run up all that number, and it's down $100 on Friday, which is kind of a lot. I did a little back of the envelope kind of scratching here, and I've got, Jimmy, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stacks. Hey, Jimmy, you got to go down and get Matt Byrne. The door won't let him in somehow.
Okay, I'm on my way.
Jan, I got 1, 2, 3, 7 stocks on Friday. NVIDIA, Micron, Microsoft, IBM, AMD, Apple, and Tesla. They're down $900 billion in market cap. Now, we're bouncing this morning. But these numbers are sort of astronomical. And one of our guys on the our Notre Dame goofball text thing, somebody goes, if I buy everybody tickets, they'll fly me out first class. Of course, they sent me the thing on the tickets. $20,000, $15,000, $16,000.
Jeez.
Jan, does every man have any concept of how much money some people in the top 1% have with the rise in the markets and in property values?
Well, it shows, you know, how hard this is to fathom by what they have to spend it on.
Yes.
It'd be one thing if they're putting it into philanthropy or whatever, but I mean, this is just purely kind of, you know, personal consumption, which is fine. You know, if you have the money, go go for it. But these just seem like such inconsequential things to spend a lot of money on for anybody, that I think it shows you must have a lot more money that you're not letting loose of.
Well, what are the... God, we had somebody in 6-8 weeks ago, Jen, was saying that the World Cup tickets in New York were like $4,000 or $5,000 a piece or something.
Yeah, so, I know people have their likes and, you know, things that they, you know, really live for and like to do with their spare time. I just can't believe that leisure time is that expensive for those kinds of things.
Well, is it somebody who is it a business thing? I mean, when the Washington Nationals, now I think, I don't even know what kind of attendance they get there, but when they were building the Washington Nationals Stadium, and this has to be, I went out and saw it like their second year, so it was a while ago. I remember because it was one of the Washington days where it had to be like 90 degrees. It was so friggin' humid. You needed somebody like walking in front of you to cut the air. It was that heavy. I got off the, whatever they call their Metra, right near the Smithsonian. And I walked through every one of the memorials. And that's a long way. I mean, it's a long way from the Smithsonian to the Lincoln Memorial.
Oh, yeah.
And then you swing out by the river and you go through the Roosevelt Memorial, and the Jefferson is a long way. Anyway, I made it back, and I was going to go to the Smithsonian, and I'm going, and I was, you know, pretty good shape at the time, and I'm going, you know what? I need to go back to the hotel and hop in the shower. I can't get in line for the Smithsonian here and stand next to somebody for an hour. But it's sort of a long kick, but you just kind of, I don't know where I'm going with this, but you end up, you know, the amount of money that is spent by people. When the stadium was built, every lobbyist firm, I mean, the combat, John and Jimmy, was damn near hand-to-hand on who was going to get the skyboxes and who was going to get the best seats. Every law firm, every lobbyist firm had to have seats, even if they never intended to go. I mean, it's just something you had to have. I mean, because what if four of my biggest clients came to Chicago and said, geez, we got to go to a Cub game? Okay, I guess I find a way to pay for tickets for a Cub game, even if I don't care if I even go. But I mean, there's that business demand for stuff that you're willing to do anything for a client, even though you'd never do it for yourself, right? And
yeah.
I'll tell you one, talk about anecdotal. I went and I saw a couple Cubs games out there, and one night, this is back when you could walk up and buy a ticket, you know, so I buy a ticket, I'm in the, up by the press box, and the back, there's like four decks to the thing. I'm up there, I'm so high up in the back, I'm going, who the hell, and I'm right by the press box. And I had heard the Cub guys saying, boy, you can't see anything from up here. Well, the next night, I have tickets right down by the dugout, or, you know, in that area. And I'm the outfield side of the aisle. Well, the section over from me, it must have been all the lobbyists and law firms' tickets. And they had to give them all away. I never saw, you know, maybe you could go to a beach in Vienna or someplace, if there is a beach. I don't think I've ever saw more good-looking young people in my life. They must give it all to their staffers, right? And most of the staffers are ladies. I mean, it's not, you know, an overwhelming percentage. Every inning, these girls are walking up and down the aisle, and I'm thinking, they can't be drinking that much beer or they go to the bathroom. Finally, I'm like, imagine a guy, you know, a red-blooded guy saying, God, ladies, could you just sit down so I can watch the game? Everybody did was parade up and down the aisle. You know, for a few innings, it was really kind of cool, if you have any kind of testosterone. But after a while, I'm going, I've seen the same girl 6 times. Can't we just sit down? But the people, but they're just giving them. I bet they all still have those seats. And I bet if you go there every night, it's half empty.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
But you got to have them.
You know, in my own experience, I mean, this is going back 30 or 40 years when I was in-house as a lawyer, but the only Bulls games I think I've seen in my lifetime were courtesy of various law firms that were, you know, trying to you know, reinforce a business relationship with the insurance company I worked for. It was all, you know, dinner beforehand. You know, you go to the most. I mean, I was, don't get me wrong, I loved it. I got to see Michael Jordan. I got to see all this stuff. And it was, you know, wonderful. It probably wasn't something that I was likely to do on my own at the time, or certainly not do year after year after year. I didn't have that kind of money to devote to that and everything else that I liked to do. But it showed really to me how, you know, when currying favor with a business or your client relationship or whatever, it's really important to do. And this kind of stuff naturally feeds into that. And of course, what it really does is jack up the price for everybody else too, because well, sure the stakes are pretty high to do it, you know, in a way that's productive to you or somebody else. And you can benefit from it long term. But for the average person who's, you know, not skybox material or doesn't want to sit in the skybox every time they go to the game, it kind of leaves them as a victim of pricing that just pushes them away completely.
Well, Mesro, I mean, I was kind of privy to some of this stuff before Jimmy Tyree unfortunately passed, because he became a pretty good friend. And what a terrific man.
Oh, he was a great guy. I mean, I missed the Sun-Times when he was, you know, the owner.
Well, he saved the Sun-Times. He also saved Marist High School, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, but I was with him at one of these economic club functions, and they had a skybox for the Sox. They had four seats on the floor at the Bulls, which I actually got to sit one night, which were pretty neat. Actually, I think they might have had two seats, but they were right on. You're one of the schmucks that sat right on in the seats, you know, on the floor itself.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they had a skybox for the Sox. I think the thing, Jimmy, help me here. What do they hold? 16, 20, something like that?
Yeah, people? About 16. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's 20, but it's say 16. And he says to me, he goes, the thing is a real pain in the ass. And I go, why? He says, well, it costs a fortune. He goes, one of my best ladies, it's all she does in the summertime is schedule that damn box. She goes, so you got 81 dates. And you have, you know, how many people in the place, but you have to make sure, A, that you never have order up all kinds of chow and nobody's there. Yep. But for your people, even if you parcel it out to every salesman, everybody who's a revenue getter, gets it 3-4 times a year, you have to make sure that they have 16 people there that are potential or current clients, that are not bringing their brother-in-law's family because they can't pass it, you know, to get rid of the tickets. He goes, it's an effort every single night to fill it up with the people you want to have it filled up with. He goes, it's actually almost a full-time job for this lady, and says she's one of my best people, is working this box. It's not just, we went to one of my traders when he left the trading floor. He went to work for Ticketmaster or somebody. And I'll ask Jimmy, he's our moral guy. And I'll ask you, there we were in the skybox at the Cubs game, and I think it was a Cubs game, because you can hop over from one to the other if you wanted to. Yeah, it had to be the Cubs game. The Sox were inside. But the, so we are, you know, we bought our case of beer for $120, whatever it was, and hot dogs, and you know, we're having a good old time. Well, the box next to us must have been some accounting or law firm. Not a soul shows up. They've got ribs, shrimp, everything you want. You look over into the thing and you're going, what the hell? There's not a soul there. And one of the guys goes, you know, we could hop right over there. I go, we can't do that. What's the matter with you? You know, and about five guys are going, they're just going to throw it out. Anyway, we didn't do it, but I'm thinking, I suppose if I had to do it all over again. Of course, what do you do if you got a bunch of schmucks in the next place over there chowing down and somebody shows up in the eighth inning? That would not be so cool. But the place didn't even, it was all top shelf, all the chow and the stuff, and there wasn't a soul there. I don't know how many times a year that happens.
Well, I've seen that even at Ravinia, you know, up in Highland Park this summer, you know, music festival, the Chicago Symphony and pop, you know, jazz, everything. You'd go to, like, you could sit out on the lawn, you know, for not much money, but there'd be all over the place, like, big setups with tents and tables, and there'd be like a flag or whatever, or a banner identifying this is accounting firm so-and-so or law firm so-and-so, that they'd, you know, told everybody to come that night, you know, and then they'd feed you, and you could sit and listen to music, and, you know, whatever. Booze all over the place. And you'd see some of these places that had food for an army, and there were like six people poking around. So somebody's is going to roll on Monday.
And that's where you walked in and said,
"Hey, I just got hired by this firm. Can I sit down?
I interview with you guys. Let me taste out your chow to see if it's worth working for you, schmucks.
Just table hop. Go from place to place."
Well, John, what is
the amount of money invested in this time and the return that's expected? Oh, yeah. Sometimes it gets way out of whack, but I think it's really affected, you know, admission prices, you know, the gate, you know, what the stadiums have to produce, and, you know, the people that have to step up and pay this. But there almost is no end of supply for that, because there seems to be something that everything is designed around that, pretty much.
It's what about our buddy? And I won't blab the name out there, that every Notre Dame game, and he's retired now, but he had a massive tailgater right by the senior bar. And they're a huge accounting firm, and they always were recruiting people out of Notre Dame, and they part of the deal was, come by our tailgate. Did you ever go to one of Leo's tailgates?
No, I never did, but I heard about them.
Yeah, they're massive. And it was one of the accounting firms, and that's what he did. Is, you know, all the recruits that they were interviewing, and they knew who they were, they'd come by, and they'd bring their buddies and their family, and, God, they had, you know, food for 100, for God's sake. And, you know, booze the whole bit. And that was, he'd get in there, he had a big, big station wagon, and he just had a station wagon, SUV to learn how to sit. But, you know, it's interesting stuff. I mean, it's things. Now, what is a day like Friday? And I'll call you every man, because you're not looking at the market all day long. What does a day like Friday tell you? But now the bounce back today. I mean, we're bouncing back almost 40% on the NASDAQ. We're down over 1,000, and we're up almost 400 today. What does that tell you? Does it mean that the government's in to make the save today, that they're reinforcing the buy the dip? Or was Friday just an anomaly and people really had selling? I mean, or all of the above? What do you think?
I think, you know, there's movement to step in and save the day. It can't be just, you know, this is just, you know, an unforeseen, you know, wrinkle or a blip. It's something that has been, you know, feared and is being planned for all the time, I suspect. In some ways, I hope it is.
Well, yeah, I mean,
nobody's caught too short by any of this stuff, but what's amazing to me, just looking very much as an outsider, is how little effect it really has in, you know, any momentum going forward. It isn't like it really changes people's thinking very much. It doesn't make people fearful of what could really happen. It doesn't, you know, make people more nervous than they already are. It's just that, you know, there's a endless optimism and almost kind of like ignorance of what's going on. So, it's probably, you know, that's healthier than just having the thing as, you know, a seesaw, and everybody's getting, you know, washed up one day, flushed the next day, and after a while people just want to get out of it because they can't live that way.
Well,
people are pretty accustomed to it now.
But it's been really, I'm going to say, since, well, you could go back, the one article I read, everybody, you could go back to 1987 and say the Fed flooded the place after that. And it was clearly long-term capital, but it's really been obvious since the 2007 stuff, 2007-2008, to where, I mean, we have clients that when the market looks horrible, can't wait to jump in and double up and buy from the downside. And there's no way, as much as I feel the market might be, you know, a little high and standing there in 87 where it did keep going, it puts any kind of a broker, money manager, anybody, in a bad place. I mean, in terms of advice, it's very similar. Remember the movie Field of Dreams?
Oh yeah.
Where the young Burt Lancaster is up batting and he's winking at the pitcher, and so the guy keeps throwing at his head, and he had to knock the kid down twice, and everybody's booing him for knocking the kid down, and the guy goes, okay, you got two balls on her, or he's got two balls on you, so he's probably not going to throw it at your head, but just in case he does, be ready to duck. It feels like you're given that kind of advice. Well, yeah, every single time for 20 years, every dip has been a buy, but God, if it ever isn't, you know, be careful. It's the same thing. It's like, you know, he probably won't throw at your head, but be prepared to duck. It's the same thing. I mean, how do you give that advice?
Right. Well, and, you know, it was different in I think it was different in a different information age, too, because 1987, you know, pre-internet, you know, pre-lot of stuff. But I remember, you know, during the crash, how people were gathering at, you know, the corner, you know, of the Payne Weber sign, you know, it had the Dow, you know, activity. And it gave me the creepiest feeling that I was looking at, you know, some kind of, you know, Depression era documentary or newsreel. Because at all four corners, people were just standing there watching the thing. Well, I had never seen that before. I mean,
that was kind of a 1 or 2 or 3 day phenomenon, which, you know, still hurts to me to this day.
And it gathered momentum day by day, too. And all of a sudden, people who never really paid much attention to the market were like possessed by it. And yeah. There were not that many ways you could get accurate, up to date information then compared to now. But I just thought it was a terrorizing thing in a way when I look back on it. And I wasn't in the market, you know, as a participant or anything, so your perspective would be a lot more useful.
Nobody wants to hear.
right. Well, but I wonder if are people kind of immunized from that now, or shielded?
They are absolutely convinced that the Lone Ranger, meaning the Fed, will always come over the top. And now I look at Mike Rand. The reason why I keep looking at that one is because that was one of the crazy ones in 2000. It's the same stock, and it's 26 years later, right? The stock is gone from like 300 to 1,000 in virtually no time. They got 1.1 billion shares outstanding, so you're talking, you know, $800 billion in market cap. And, you know, these are the people that are buying the tickets for $20,000 for tonight's game, right? Which, you know, I don't begrudge them. I mean, wish I had, you know, 5,000 shares of Micron from $6 where it went after in 2000 and still had it. That would be kind of neat, wouldn't it? Well, yeah. The thing's down $100 on Friday. They're 21 times revenue, which is roughly double the amount where stocks were in 2000 when they all cracked. So it's massive, which isn't to say they have, you know, they didn't find a gold mine underneath their corporate headquarters or whatever. It isn't to say it's a short. So the stock's down $100 on Friday. And instead of people thinking, well, maybe the thing shouldn't have gone up $700 and whatever, it's up $62 right now and climbing every second. There's not a downtick. Like, somehow the thing belongs over $1,000. Okay, I mean, I think if you were to, you know, some people, not us, some people probably are aware that somebody's buying this morning, whether it's the Fed, whether it's somebody. Because, I mean, the normal person wouldn't necessarily come in this morning and say, God, this Micron's ridiculously cheap down here at 880. Because it's not. You know, I mean, it just isn't. You can find some other place. If somebody sent me money today, I'll find you, you know, we'll find other places that maybe have more value. But in my opinion, but it's to the point where we have a savior, and we have, in fact, a few years ago, I think Greenspan, who was the guy who came after Greenspan, between him and Yellen, tell us the guy's name.
Bernanke?
Yeah. He comes out and he does his shtick, and he drives the market up. So I walk into the AAA one night, there's a guy sitting there, and he goes, what'd you think of the Fed speech? I guess he goes, well, he did everything he could to drive the market up, and he was successful. And the guy goes, that's his job. Okay, then. It's been so long, and it's become so obvious to everybody that it drives me nuts having Powell say 100 times a newscast that his job is inflation, containing inflation and money. His job right now is to maintain the bubble. Anybody who doesn't think that, you know what, I got a bridge for you. His job is to maintain the bubble and not let the market go down. And I can't imagine the phone calls from President, wherever he is, saying, what are we going to do about this market going down on Friday? I can't imagine what's happening between the White House and the Fed and God knows who. No, they're already calling the new guy. What are you doing? What's the matter? This is crazy. I can't let this happen. I'm going to the Knick game tonight. Can't have another down day. Or they'll boo the hell out. Whatever. We're so close to this. And from a money standpoint, John, it's obvious to me, and it's not like it's a criticism, it just is. The stock market right now, and to a certain extent the housing market, that's where the wealth is. It's not people making more money at work. It's not any of those kinds of things. It is to a certain extent, you know, with wages are going up 2% a year, but you're not gaining wealth that way, are you? When inflation's 5 or more, and your raise is 2 or 3, I'm sorry, that's not how you make wealth, is it?
God no.
Look at the last month. We're down to 2.6% savings rate. Yet the market's up, you know, huge. Where's the wealth? Is it in the savings rate or is it in the market? I mean, you want people. I want my clients to have wealth. That's why I'm a wealth manager, for God's sake. So it's not like I don't want that to happen. I do, but at some point you sit there and go, you know, is it too much? And, you know, markets go up, markets go down. That's why, you know, I always think when markets are up high, you want to be protected in a lot of ways. But no, we're not seeing that, or are we? It's supposed to
continue. No.
I mean, would you, if I were to have given you a test, and Jimmy's been in the market a long time as well, if I would have given you a test 5 years ago, said, what if we had some massive disease flying at us from China, knocks off probably 100 million people in China, knocked off a bunch of people here, and we've got everything shut down totally for God knows how long, 6 months or something, back and forth, and the GDP, well, it didn't drop that much because we poured so much money in the system. What would you think the market would be? And you'd go, well, God, it'd be way down. But if everything came back, it would come back somewhat. We were in new records before we even unshut down, didn't we?
Yep.
I mean, what sense does that make to everybody? And we're now, well, not after Friday, but 2 days before, we're at new records. How long can you listen every day to somebody say, market's up on anticipation of a ceasefire? Market's higher than it was before there was a fire.
Right.
I mean, where does somebody who, you know, off, it's not like you don't listen to markets because I was listening to the show, but what do you think of that?
Well, you know, it's something that I think most people are not deeply versed in. I'd probably put myself in that group too. But, you know, everybody is in the market, Tom, whether they like it or not.
Well, way more than it used to be, because everybody's got, not everybody, most people have a 401k. There's a huge slosh of society that doesn't, obviously.
Right.
Probably if you're anywhere in the, you know, in the, what do you call business? Hospitality business, restaurant business. Maybe your bigger chains have 401ks, but the mom and pop restaurant doesn't, I don't think. I mean, but then you can still have an IRA, right?
Right. And, you know, as your pensions completely vanished, you know, what other possible way do people have to build any kind of, you know, wealth or retire at some point in their lives? And so it's later, you know, every year it seems than people expected it to be, when they can actually feel comfortable retiring. But this is something that was not the case, you know, 50, 100 years ago, where the market was the way people were able to safeguard their family wealth without any other possibility. You know, Social Security doesn't fit the bill. And you mentioned real estate as being the other, you know, piece of this, you know, wealth foundation. But how many people are really not part of the real estate market and are not, you know, ever going to be in it? Which is also, you know, different from the way it was 1,500 years ago. Everybody's in the market in some way or another, I think. But when it comes to real estate, a lot of people are completely shut out of it. And this has got, you know, the same kind of effect in a way, that people are, you know, prevented from having any other way of making money on property. But what else can they make property on if they're not in the business of making money? So I find it you know, kind of a weird setup now, where at a time when you would think people could find some kind of safe haven in buying a house and trading up and eventually having something they could pass on. Forget it. You know, it's not going to happen. So it's a terrible kind of, you know, imbalance between, you know, the only way you can make money and a way that you could make money if things were different, but you're prevented from making money. So,
well, I was, Audrey had, she'll be on today. It was her birthday yesterday. And, let's just say that, Audrey and her pals take their birthdays to a new level. By the way, where were you? You were supposed to be there.
I had a prior engagement time.
Yes,
I really did.
Yes. So, but a good time was had by all, but one of the young ladies, actually, it's an interesting group, because the lady who was on, who runs the Fisher House stuff, Diane Kelly, I don't know, John, I love Diane, but there I was sitting next to her, and all of a sudden I'm getting the push. What do you think the push is?
Fundraising.
Worse or better. looking for a new board member.
Oh. Well, that's kind of why I had this prior engagement yesterday.
That's why you didn't show up? You thought she was going to talk to you?
No, because I'm on another board. That, you know, okay. It's a literary subject. You know, but it involves obligations that, you know, require you to kind of stand with other people when they're in a fundraising mode or whatever they're trying to do. So it's a lot of responsibility.
Well, you know, I said, you know, I don't mind lobbing a few ideas in, but first of all, it's pretty damn flattering that somebody even asks you that.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm blowing it off. I'm not. But Diane, you know, she's an absolutely terrific lady. Get a load of this. She comes. Audrey's little shindig was at 2:00. She comes right from the veterans' home. Now, she's been there since 5, because that's when they have the mass for everybody on Sunday. So she is the altar girl and whatever. And then she grabs the communion thing. She must be, what do you have to do? You have to be a subdeacon or something to give out communion? I don't even know.
Extraordinary minister.
Something like that. But so, so all the guys that can't make it down to the chapel, she goes to their room and gives them communion. This takes her hours. This is every Sunday. And what a fantastic lady. I mean, she's telling me about, she went to, she's good friends with some dentist. And she went there, and now the guy's son, I think it's his son, might be his daughter, but I think it's his son, is now entering the practice after dental school. The dude's, what did she say, 500 grand student loan? 450, 600,
oh, I believe
some incredible number. And she probably didn't know it. I didn't want to zero in. I hope the guy's paying like 2.5% or 3% like the government was paying. I bet he's not. I bet he's paying 6.5%.
Oh, I'm sure
he's
paying 6% like I did.
What the hell? What are we doing? And, you know, we constantly talk on the show. I mean, I always go back and forth with Carl about, you know, people not wanting a lot of these jobs. And, and I don't know exactly why, as brilliant as Carl is, why he's sort of fixated on this, but it seems like every single time people that have come in, the late arrivals, shall we say, be it the Irish digging the I&M Canal, and nobody knows what that is, the Irish going west on the railroad, and the mostly Chinese people coming east, nobody wanted those jobs. I mean, some people think that if you just would have made the pay high enough, somehow somebody's leaving, you know, Saratoga in New York or someplace and coming here and working on a railroad. You know, I got news for you. That's not happening. You know, nobody's going to go dig a canal through a swamp if you got money. Marshall Field's kid's not about to do that, was he? I don't think so. But anyway, when you talk to Audrey and Nancy and you talk about who actually is buying homes, younger people, almost inevitably, it's a guy, you know, this is being somewhat sexist, but not, a guy who maybe went to 2 years someplace, and actually maybe went to another 2 years at Northern Illinois or somewhere, or didn't even, or just did 2 years and didn't do any, that is 30 years old and he's been an electrician for, you know, 10 years, 12, 8 years, and he's marrying some lady who's, I don't know, this is, might have been a nurse for 7 or 8 years. They've got savings. They've got money. They don't owe anybody anything. I think maybe you could owe a little bit coming out of nursing school, but not that much, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're the young couple that is competing with people with the dough to buy a house. It's not the guy graduating, unless your parents paid for it. It's not the guy coming out of Notre Dame with $250,000 in debt and having a job paying $65,000 a year. There's no way that guy's competing with somebody who's owned a home for 30 years, is he?
Nope.
But the couples that are, you know, and it could be the guy's the nurse. I mean, who the hell knows? But the fact is, these alleged, I won't call them, how would you describe it before I stumble over myself? These are not necessarily blue-collar jobs, but they're jobs that don't need this massive amount of scratch. What was telling me last night? Scott. Scott's been on the show. Scott Benjaminson. I saw him. He's an actor. He was in a, I learned all about that. He must come back on to talk about what's going on with the acting and the extras and stuff, and it'll be great. I'll bring him out on a Monday. Well, he works on Sunday nights, maybe, but anyway. But he was, you know, he was telling me, what do you say, Northwestern is up to $100,000? 20 grand of which is room and board, or 95 or some number?
Yeah, which is also ridiculous.
Yeah.
At the same time, the couple, you know, the template you gave about the electrician and the nurse, those are really the lucky ones, because you could get, you know, you could get nursing training at a community college at least to be a, you know.
Well, St. Xavier's has a huge program.
Not a registered nurse, but you could be a, you know, licensed practitioner. And make money and do lots of gigs. You know, there's always a hunger for nurses. It's tough work, but you got the skill, you got the credential. You can turn it into an income. And the same thing with an electrician or an HVAC guy or anything. And it doesn't take a boatload of money to do that, so you don't have a boatload of debt when you're just starting out. But for the people who aimed what they thought was going to be higher, the ones who did amass this enormous amount of debt, to become, you know, what, a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, join some profession. Those people are really chasing the wrong, you know, dream now.
Well, you're not chasing the wrong dream. The dream has been priced away from you for whatever reason.
Right, and the fault, you know, what I'm really thinking of is those people really can't aim for any kind of an opportunity to start a business in those areas. The ability to open a dental practice, to open up a doctor's office or a law firm, and not, you know, be kind of beaten from the start these days, because you're going to be like every other doctor has become, whether you wanted to or not. You're going to be an employee of some bigger operation, and you're going to be cut the first time there's any kind of, you know, reduction in whether they hit their mark or not, and you didn't pull in enough business, took too much time off, any number of excuses why you're not going to be an employee there anymore. And that was never something that people who joined professions ever worried about. You could start a business and you could thrive, and you could hire a couple of assistants and make really good money and run your own show and not have to take orders from anybody. And the people who are the most in debt now, with the biggest aspirations, are in some ways going to be worse than the people, you know, working in the sweatshops 100 years ago.
I mean, an interesting little South Side story. I got out of school and I'm looking for a dentist, and my cousin says, "Hey, there's a guy over here in Oak Lawn. He's like really, really good." And I go to the guy and he takes me as a patient. This is, God knows how many years ago this was. And the dude is, John, you ever get the feeling when somebody does something and the way he's talking to you and the way he's moving, you go, this guy's not an ordinary dentist. he's like really good at this. And I don't know nothing about dentistry other than you drill your teeth, right? And all of a sudden he's talking like my previous dentist didn't even talk like this. I mean, this guy, well, sure enough, after like 2 years, the dude gets recruited to come teach at some real high-end dental academy, and off he goes. Well, this other guy, Dr. Salmon, buys the practice. And I go to him, and he's maybe not quite the same, but he's pretty damn good. And after like 30 years, I'm over at the health club, and my trader buddies goes, "Where's you going?" I'm going to get my teeth cleaned. He goes, "You still go back to the south side and get your teeth cleaned?" I go, "Oh, yeah, same dentist." He goes, "What do you do that for?" So I talked to him. I said, "Hey, Doc, some guy asked me why I keep coming to the same dentist." And he goes, "Did you tell the guy you still got all your teeth?" I'm thinking, well, that was the right... Well, his daughter, I became pretty friendly with, and the dude has 8 to 10 kids. He ended up putting them all through college. You know, this is a long time ago. And the daughter's telling me, "Dad was 3 years out of school, buys a practice." I think the guy must have held some paper. He goes, he pays the dude off in a year, puts everybody through college, has a nice car, a nice house. She goes, "I've been out of school 10 years. The chances of me buying a practice ever are like zero." She ended up joining the Army and being a dentist on an Army base. Because she really wanted to do that kind of dentistry. She goes, "One thing."
And she'll get a pension.
Well, she died young, but so she won't get the pension. But she says, you know, the weird part is, if you take care of people's teeth from the time they're kids, which is we're family dentistry, she goes, "You really never run into any problems." She goes, it's almost boring. So, right. See, but if you go to a prison where the one son went, who was a dentist, if you go to a prison or an Army base, you're seeing all the stuff you saw in dental school, and you get to practice kind of what you learned, because people are coming in, everything's all messed up. She goes, "Look at you." She goes, "We clean your teeth every 3 months. There's never a problem. Once in a while, we'll replace a filling that's been there 20 years. She goes, that's not exactly high-end dentistry. And I'm like, thanks. But you're right. The difference in being able to do this kid Diane was talking about, how's he with $700,000 or whatever it is of debt, how the hell is he going to buy a practice?
Well, he'll be lucky to get hired something.
Yeah, he's lucky to get hired. Yeah. How do we kind of turn this somehow or another? I mean, our buddies just had their 50-year reunion at Notre Dame. It's not our place anymore, John. We would never go there. I think a couple of us out of the 10 or 12 of us that are still pretty tight, I would say two of us would get in today.
Yeah, I wouldn't get in. I know.
I think I still would. I'm not sure. I was a National Merit Finalist, so I think I might have been able to, but maybe not. And I don't know if anybody else who had more credentials going in than me. Maybe Hippie, Tom Conway, my chemistry roommate.
Yeah, that was a bright guy.
Yeah, he might have been. And maybe our buddy Dr. Johnson. But other than that, I don't see any of the rest of the people getting into you, and maybe not me.
No. I feel like I really have, in some ways, had led a charmed life, that I got that opportunity, because in some other time in history, it wouldn't have been within my parents' ability to pay for it, let alone my academic credentials.
Okay, but it was $3,000 a year.
Yeah.
And we could make, if you busted your ass in the summer, we could make $1,000. And you could work in the cafeteria at Notre Dame and make another $800. Right? So, I mean, it was within the realm of us to help. How do you help if it's $100,000?
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted.
It's just I was at a lucky point in my family's history where the forces came together, and I didn't have to be a straight A student, and my parents didn't have to be millionaires, but I still got what I still think is a great education. And had I been born, 50 years before that, it wouldn't have happened. Had I been born 50 years later, I know it wouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
So I feel like I was blessed, and I always have to keep that in perspective, that how you use college, or whether you go to college or not, or whatever, it's kind of a special thing, or should be, and not everybody is going to make a go of it. Not everybody's going to succeed at it. And some people will never even get a crack at it.
Well, Jen, is there some other motive? We were talking politics a little bit last night, is there some other? If you look at, I consider, three or four to varying degrees not the best presidents in a row. I don't know where I go back to starting, where I thought one was pretty good, but every time I think the people have disappointed me. Now, maybe I have pretty high standards, but, you know, and the last two have certainly disappointed me to a huge extent. I mean, it's not, they're not even on the same planet as what I think they should have done. But then again, that's just me. But you wonder, is there some social thing going on? I mean, some kind of a fascist takeover? Is it a plutocracy? Kleptocracy. I mean, do the people that have the money really want to be in charge of everything? Do they really want the smartest people in the country and dead up their eyeballs because there's no way they can be a political force? There's no way they're giving money to anybody. I mean, how the hell do you do that if you got a student loan? There's no way you're starting another political party. There's no way you can even walk down the street and protest because you're going to get fired by the firm because the firm's got their nose up the ass of whoever happens to be president. I mean, is there more going on here than just money? I'm getting this weird feeling that there is.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's a function of who's president or who's, you know, whatever else is going on in the world. That, you know, it's too deeply entrenched for us to kind of assign it to a faction here or a ruler there or a presidential administration here. And none of that stuff is really, you know, able to kind of stand up to this kind of stuff. It's much bigger than that. And, you know, when people talk about the deep state or world government or globalist kind of stuff, it's always cast in such vague terms deliberately because nobody really knows who to blame for what's going wrong or, you know, who to attack, you know, and get out of there so that somebody else could do this. It's not that kind of, you know, relationship between the governors and the governed, but it's a plutocracy, certainly more than it is oligarchies and all these other labels that are bandied around are just kind of a way of dodging the bigger issue. That people are so victimized in their choices, and the idea is to give them fewer and fewer choices all the time. So, you know, you don't have any say about, you know, how much money you can make or how affordable an education could or should be in order to better yourself. And now it's going to educate people to think there's no reason to be educated because you can't make any more money out of it. So, you know, once you have a less and less educated population, you got a much easier one to control. It's all about making it easy to do something, you know, somewhere, everywhere, without enough pushback from people who would, you know, say, wait a minute. That's not part of the equation. You got to get rid of that force. And it's pretty successful. And I don't blame particular presidents any more than any others for how that's happened, because I don't think they're free agents.
Well, somebody somewhere has got to find the men behind the curtain and maybe lop a head off or two. Whoever the men behind the curtain are. I had a very interesting debate. I don't know if you've noticed on 2 weeks ago. Actually, Jimmy, you were the one who brought it up to me. Was CBS had dumped all their radio stations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm
now WBBM carries ABC News.
I was just going to say, last night I'm listening to BBM and I went home. And instead of having 60 Minutes on, they've got whatever this ABC news magazine, and they're talking about it. And I'm, you know, whatever side of the aisle you're on, the controversy of this guy running for leading the Democratic ticket in Maine on the primary. The guy's name
Plattner, Graham Plattner.
So he's beating the hell out of the lady who's running. So she suspends her campaign, but she's still on the ballot. And all of a sudden, the guy, allegations, as Mayor Daley said, who are these alligators? The alligators surfaced from a couple of ex-girlfriends that he was somewhat abusive on a couple of occasions. But, you know, we're talking years ago, I think. I'm not defending any of it. And he, evidently he, was he in Iraq, Afghanistan? He was someplace. And he came back with some, evidently documented by the veterans and stuff, I'm not positive on that.
Oh, yeah, he's got PTSD.
Serious PTSD. And he went through, they were giving him drugs and everything. He went through a pretty nasty time in life. And that's kind of the time, I think, when somebody's, we're talking about grabbing somebody's arm, you know, squeezing too hard, which, you know, you're not supposed to do. Everybody knows that. But it's, we're not talking about, you know, whacking somebody in the head with a hammer either. I mean, how hard is too hard? You start walking down this chain when it's allegations and nobody's testifying under oath. You know, I'm you as an attorney, John, probably are even more kind of weirded out by stuff like that. I mean, what exactly is a 30-year-old allegation from somebody who won't take the stand and won't swear? I mean, it's probably true. I don't know. But where you put that, I honestly don't have any idea. So now it is, how many years later, and they have this senator, Democratic senator from Virginia, and to comment on this. And they're asking him some pretty tough questions. And he goes, none of this stuff is appropriate. I said, but it's kind of a while ago. And he goes, who are you comparing him to? I mean, we have people in Washington right now that have done 10 times worse than that, assuming the guy even did it. I mean, he goes, we got somebody in the Oval Office. If you start comparing allegations, for God's sake. I mean, where are we in this stuff? He goes, there was a time in this country where anybody who did anything like that was pretty much, you know, outed. He goes, that's not the case anymore. So he goes, I'm going to leave it up to the people in Maine. And the lady goes, well, wait a minute, what do you mean? He goes, the voters are going to have to judge how serious it was. When it was happening, was it during the PTSD stuff? They're going to find out all about this. They're going to get some kind of a judgment on who the people are that are making the allegations and if they have any kind of agenda. And they're going to make the call. And the lady's like, well, you don't think it? He goes, it's not up to me to tell a guy what to do. It's up to him to be truthful about what happened, lob it out, and let the people decide. And I thought he was, as much as he didn't seem like he wanted to say that, John, that is today's world. You're not going to get, if something comes out about Epstein and Trump with a young lady, which I hope it doesn't, he's not going to quit, is he? I don't think so. You know, so, I mean, now we're in this kind of cesspool all over the damn place, and then you lob the stuff about drugs and PTSD on top of it and phases of life, and what do you like today? And right now, you've got this history you're probably not proud of, if it's true. Now what do? Do you fold up your tent and you go live in the Unabomber camp, or do you try and make something out of your life now? There's a gazillion questions going on here, and I don't know if the press is helping at all. I don't think they are. You know, I mean,
and the thing I've noticed too is that, you know, I can see why the senator from Virginia, you know, took that approach to it, because to say anything other than that would bring down the wrath of every other Democratic senator. Because they want the seat in Maine and they want Susan Collins out, and they're going to willingly, you know, take a pass on criticizing, you know, Graham Platner personally and saying it's up to the voters, because they'd love to see the outcome that he wins. They may hold their nose because he's not their ideal candidate. You know, the thing about Platner, and the more that's come out and the more that's talked about, I've dug in a little bit with his story. And I've just concluded the guy really needs help. And I think he's had a series of...
I don't know anything about him. I just... idea that all these accusations...
He's been bankrolled by his father. His parents divorced when he was 5 or 6 years old. The mother remarried. He's got, you know, step-siblings. And he's never worked a day in his life. And he's on disability now. That's a source of income and an oyster farm.
Well, how did he end up in the Army? He had all that money.
What money?
Well, you said he's being bankrolled by his father.
No, I mean, he's being bankrolled by his father sent him, Platner, and his wife to Norway for in vitro fertilization counseling because she had a miscarriage. They wanted to have a kid. They don't have the money to do any of this stuff. So the father has paid for that. But he's a well-connected guy, Tom. His grandfather was an architect, same name, Platner, I think Warren Platner, who designed the interior of Windows to the World, you know, at the Twin Towers.
By the way, I love that place. Were you ever in there?
No, I was never in there. I just saw pictures of it. I was at the site.
It was a bar.
Yeah.
Nice bar. A real nice bar.
Oh, but he designed the furniture, the decor,
remember the decor being that much special. It was nice, but whatever.
But, you know, he was a...
By the way, it could have been my favorite bar of all time. What an amazing view. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
You're looking right over the harbor. I mean, it was really, really something.
But you know, Platner, you know, has he just really can't get his story straight because I think he's not clear on what he's done. He, you know, apparently, I mean, this has been suspected that he wanted to do another, you know, gig in the Marines or the Army, and they wouldn't accept him. And so,
well,
he
at
went
some
to
point,
Blackwater.
You get to. I mean, I have a couple of members of my family that were in NAM, and they both died young. One of them for sure, and one came back on disability, and one died young, and he was never accepted back in society. It was pretty awful. I mean, friends are gone. The girls you knew are all married to somebody else. I mean, it's pretty bad. And then people thought you lost anyway. I mean, it was pretty awful.
Well, you know, he has taken on this crusade where he says that he was sent to Iraq by Susan Collins because it was her, you know, vote that made him go there, which is total BS. I mean, he joined before Susan Collins weighed in on anything. And from apparently age 8, he was, you know, wild about the military. He did Civil War.
She's been in there that long though. Voted on Iraq.
Well, he's born in 84, so he's like 42 now.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think he enlisted, you know, before Susan Collins ever cast a vote for anything on Iraq. So
what
he says,
how did she vote for it?
Well, she didn't.
I know, it's kind of weird.
But she certainly wasn't the catalyst for his going to Iraq. Now that he's become, you know, vehemently anti-war in retrospect, and there's footage of him heckling George W. Bush, you know, in 2001, no war, but, you know, it stops the show kind of. With,
well, I wish he would have heckled a little more.
Well, yeah, but you know, he's misapplied, you know, all of his angst about it and blame Susan Collins for it.
See, now, Jan, if you were ever a campaign manager, there's one phrase you have to emblazon on your forehead. Never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
You know, he was picked up by this couple, these socialists of America.
So how did Maine end up with this guy? How do you end up with these people?
It's because it's this couple, that they got a line on him from somebody when they were, you know, shopping around for candidates, just like the Justice Democrats did with the squad members and AOC. These people were bartenders or whatever else before somebody said, hey, you've got possibilities.
You don't like, we got something against bartenders?
No, but, you know, I just don't think that they're necessarily, they belong in the House of Representatives. But, you know,
who does?
I mean, they can't be.
Who does?
But with Plattner, he was, you know, singing
what
the song.
What part of the people's house don't you get? They're people.
Of course. And I'm just saying that, but for the fact that two, you know, a couple who had money and wanted a socialist candidate for Maine for some office, you know, got a line on him, went to his mother and said, how do we contact him? And she gave him his phone number. And he, you know, they met with him. They encouraged him, we will back you. They got Bernie Sanders on his side. And, you know, Sanders is a big supporter of his because he's singing Bernie Sanders' song.
Sanders is technically an independent, right?
Yes, he is.
But he caucuses Democrats. You know,
but
he's a socialist.
I'm going to ask.
I don't think he should be ashamed.
Right. I'm going to ask you, John. Why? I mean, this. I know you're on the one side of the political, but this is a, I won't say a criticism, but a critical question. Why is it that I can have a very intelligent conversation about what's going on with the plutocracy and the fact that certain people that I don't think care what party's in there are taking control of the place, and you look at, and as I was mentioning to Scott last night, I go, my view of my thought process really since I've been doing the show is really sort of changed in the sense that when somebody says something like what I think is really kind of dumb in terms of a solution, instead of just jumping on that statement and saying the person's a moron, which I don't ever want to do, I try and find out what they see and what makes them come up with this dumb conclusion. And the surprising part, and you know, this, I'm just being truthful here, guest to guest, friend to friend, why is it that the people on the Republican side can have an amazing conversation with me who's in the middle regarding how screwed up things are and how people are in charge shouldn't be in charge and the amount of money that's in there, and if you don't give, you know, money to this guy or Biden or somebody else, that somehow your business doesn't get favored or whatever. And yet anybody who rails against this crony capitalism slash bullshit that we currently have is automatically a socialist. They're not. They're just saying what we have now sucks. And by the way, they're not wrong. Their solutions, I'm sort of with you that I don't like the solutions, but they're not wrong. I mean, right now, this blows. The idea that people are charging people $80,000 a year to go to school, and so they're indentured service for life. You can't kind of criticize that and then saying, wait a minute, we got to fix this. Oh, no, you're a socialist. You want everybody to go to school for free. No, I'm not making that jump. I'm just saying what we have now blows. I mean, I don't want to be Sweden, but I should be able to say this is kind of wrong. I don't like crony capitalism. Oh, you're a socialist, you're a communist. No, I'm not. Well, why do people have to make that jump?
Just because they've discovered to their chagrin that, you know, doesn't matter who you vote for, but if you do vote for people who have a socialist agenda,
well, what does that even mean? The people who like what's going on now, what do you call them?
Oh, I don't know. They're not. It's not a Democrat Republican thing.
I would label it, and not, you know, not putting people on railroad cars. I would label it a fascist system. A few people, very well connected. A few companies in every industry with their nose firmly up the ass of government. That's a fascist system, the economic system. Well, it was German long before there were fascists. It could have been the First Reich or the Second Reich. That I am diametrically opposed to. It doesn't make me a socialist. I want a free market. How do you describe me? A guy who actually wants a free market. I'm on nobody's side at this point, it doesn't appear.
Yeah, but you don't want to vote for a Brandon Johnson or a Zoran Mamdani, you know.
No, I don't want to vote for Brandon Johnson. But now here's another guy that has.
I'm just saying the socialists are running the cities, Tom. Which whatever you think is socialist, if you live in one of those cities, you can see what it's doing to you.
I push back on that too, John, and not in any kind of a bad way, but I look at a Brandon Johnson, and I look at an AOC, although I think AOC is a hell of a lot smarter.
Well, I don't.
Well, okay. Well, she's better looking.
Now we are getting down to dirty.
Yeah, but I'm saying I think I could maybe talk to her. I don't know if I could talk to him. But what they see is, I mean, what's the fallback position of this? We just talked about the tickets going for $18,000 tonight, and some people have all this money, okay? And now, this is the theme of the show today, or the conclusions that we've drawn. Some people have all this money, and we also have talked about there hasn't been what we would consider broad growth for 20 years, 20 to 30, 25 years. So the people who have all this money, if there's not, in other words, if people have grown 10%, I'll be nice, And the total growth per year is 2%. How does somebody make 10%? It's because somebody else is making 1 or 0 or negative, right? If everybody's making 5 and somebody's making 6 or 7 and everybody else is making 3, it's kind of okay. That was the 60s, John, when you and I were growing up, right? That was maybe the late 50s, 60s, maybe a couple of years into the 70s. But that's not the... So if you see somebody like this, it's got, hey, I'll pay you $36,000 for two tickets tonight. It's probably because, I'm not saying everybody's got money is a crook. You know I'm not saying that. Somewhere along the line, you've made an advantage, government or otherwise, where you're the vice president of Northwestern Hospital making 4 times more than the doctors. Okay, somehow there's an edge here that other people don't have. Now, somebody, if you look at it from the Brandon Johnson point of view, guess what? All these people are hurting. They're never going to catch up, ever. So the only solution possible is to somehow grab money from the people who somehow made it. How somebody's managed to make $400 billion where everybody else is making nothing. Whatever it is, it's sort of like the... And again, this is, I'm talking about the... making a conversation for the show. this is not my solution, but why does somebody, what was it, wasn't you know the guy who said this, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. I mean, why do you have to find a way to tax Elon Musk? Because he's got it all. I mean, there's a practicality to this that I don't. I hope we shouldn't even ever have to talk this way. But how much more can you tax somebody who's making 40 grand a year? John, you can't.
This is a socialist mantra, Tom. You know, if you have great wealth, then you deserve to be taxed greatly, and everybody else should benefit from that largesse. It's never worked that way.
When you have
socialist in control.
But why do I mean, you know me better than most. I never begrudged people that have money, because the people I knew on the trading floor, they had a good day, they might have been a little lucky, but they were working their ass off and luck found them. If I had a big day on a trading floor, I never excused myself to anybody, because I could just as easily have lost. And I was very fortunate, you know, that I had a good day. It could have gone the other way. It didn't. But the idea that I shove my ass up the nose of government and all of a sudden I got some sweetheart deal where I'm charging people, you know, $20 for a $2 umbrella in the rain because I'm the only guy who can sell it, and all of a sudden I'm a gazillionaire. I really don't feel the same way about that guy as I do of somebody who's battling out with 1,000 other people and just happens to win. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm starting to feel differently about...
I feel that way too, Tim. I'm just, you know, who's the Balzac, the French novelist, said behind every great fortune there was a great crime. And maybe that's
but
true.
I think
you can point to a couple specific crimes in this country that permitted this, and you, I think, would both agree with me that, you know, not enforcing something like the Sherman Antitrust Act is a crime, and it's had huge, you know, impact on who's got money and who can't get at it. And
but I mean, just
illegal immigration has had a huge benefit.
I don't know about that, not as much as they say.
But it benefited the same people who benefit from the, you know, not enforcing the antitrust laws.
I think there's a huge difference, and maybe I'm being naive here. I
mean, I'm just saying among things you could, it didn't have to happen that way. One was
but now it's to the point where, okay, we've got Joe Jamoke who's got. I mean, I've never seen anything in my life, even all of some of the crazy antitrust stuff that we used to study in school and some of the stuff I've seen. I've never seen anything as egregious as Musk getting a check from every time somebody else bought a Ford F-150 with a gas engine. I've never seen anything as stupid as that, ever. And now, you know, I mean, so if all of a sudden, all you know, there's no money left anywhere, I don't really have a problem. Oh, God, I mean, I don't want to be Robin Hood, take from the rich to give to the poor, but if there's only 10 rich people, nobody else got a dime. Where else are you going to get it, Jen? And how did somebody get that rich? Were they that much better of a farmer than the other guy, or did they pass some law that said they were the only guy to raise corn?
It's the latter, I think.
Yeah, I got a problem with that, and I don't know the solution.
Or selective enforcement of laws that should prevent that from happening.
Okay, and I agree, but now here we are. Now what?
Well, you start enforcing the laws.
Okay, but and do what? I mean, one of the guys in the building.
Well, you prevent something like, you know, Amazon being able to merchandise stuff across state lines and not collect tax.
Yeah. Well, okay, but now they did it for
that
10 years.
A nice start.
I know, but now what do you do to them? Now what do you do to them? That was a long time ago. Now what do you do to them?
You break them up like AT&T.
Well, I mean, break them up into what? It's only been one company.
Well, you break them up into an appliance company. Or a music company, or a clothing company, or whatever.
We're going to have Aud here in a second, but guy in the building, one of my friends, go nameless. I'll bet the dude makes. He's kind of one of the engineers in the building. I'm going to guess. Jimmy, help me with this. 45, maybe.
Probably, yeah.
I'm going to say somewhere in there. Got to buy his own insurance, which is, you know, His deductible is 10 grand. So the guy has a little bit of a problem, goes in the hospital, or he goes into the, you gotta stay in over the weekend. It was a digestive thing, right? So he ends up not being able to get the test till Monday. So they keep him there for 3 days. They do the test, and they say it's something very minor, like, go home. Okay, but now he's got a three-day hospital bill. I'm gonna bet you the bill comes out to be like $12,000 or $15,000 or something. Maybe not even, where the insurance company pays next to nothing. Tell me how the hell a guy making $45,000 a year. Now I'm not for socialized medicine or like that, but I also go, how the hell is this guy going to pay $10,000 after tax for 2 days waiting for a test on a Monday morning? I mean, what are we doing to people, John? Now, the medical establishment, I think you need an understanding of what this is doing to people before you can find a solution. Did you really have to keep them 3 days? Oh, by the way, how much are you charging? Is it $3,000 a night for essentially a hotel room? Because you're not doing anything to the guy. I mean, what are you doing? He's not in intensive care. And what's the real bill? Is the bill 10-5, so the insurance company pays 5 and he pays 10? Is the bill really should be 7, because is the insurance company going to get the discounted bill where they don't pay anything? I mean, what is going on here? I mean, I don't know the answer. Do you?
No, but if I'm looking at it from the hospital's viewpoint, it's about filling the rooms.
Okay.
So that's like running a hotel.
Okay, but at what price? I mean, are you doing?
The hospital doesn't care about the price.
But what is the nurse making for day? Is he paying $10,000, $3,000 a night for him? Was he paying the whole floor full of nurses? What's he paying? What is the variable cost of having him in a room at night?
That's of course the million-dollar question. But the thing is that the hospital, which is at that point seeing this person as an opportunity for us to book a room that we don't have anybody booked for yet, so let's make them stay. And the insurance company is there to negotiate. And the hospital knows they're not going to get everything they ask for, but nobody expects
that. I think if it's below the deductible number, they get everything they ask for.
Oh, probably, yeah. But it isn't like they're going to throw some number against the wall and see if it sticks with the insurance company. If it doesn't, they'll take whatever the insurance company is willing to pay.
We got a dash to break and bring up.
They fulfilled their duty.
They got
somebody in the room. That was their goal.
You know what somebody told me many, many years ago when I was a pretty good cost accountant? You know how the hospitals figure out what their cost per room night is? Jimmy, lob in.
I have no idea.
They take the entire amount of money they spent divided by the amount of patient nights, and that's the number.
Well, there's a number.
So, you're a hero, by the way. Ronald Reagan and his administration said...
Oh, no hero.
He's the Republican.
I was a different person.
He was a Republican guy. Anyway, what he did was... using that formula, it had nothing to do with the cost of money, how much it actually cost to have somebody there. It was, I think when he got in office, people would stay 5 days in a hospital to have a baby. And somebody in the Reagan administration said, well, you don't need 5 days anymore. You need 4. Okay, so every hospital that had maternity wards and stuff knew how many people were having babies in their area, were set up for 5. Now, all of a sudden, 20% of their rooms are empty for the fifth night. What do you suppose the cost of having a baby was after he made that momentous change? The exact same number. Because now you divided it by 4 instead of 5. You have to be careful on some of this stuff.
Well, and that's also because hospitals don't have wards anymore.
Yeah, well,
you had a curtain maybe if you were lucky.
I have a bill here. This is where were you hatched? What hospital?
Mercy.
Wow, that's my mother used to go. But I was,
My mom was in the hospital a week after she had me and my brother. And when my mom had my sister at Lewis Memorial, which was long ago closed, she was in there for a week as well.
Do you have any idea what the bill was for the week?
Yeah, I think it was $140 for my mom.
Because I have a bill here that one of the listeners sent me. He was born in 53. little company. Mom was there for a week. Now, didn't include the doctor, but included the delivery and everything. $250. Duh. Things have changed. Hey, S&P futures up 60, NASDAQ futures up 439. Maybe we'll make all back on Friday. We'll be right back. We'll give a little bit of what's going on in the stock markets, and we should have Audrey.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
How would you like to save money on nearly all your prescription drugs? We've set up a special toll-free number for the RX Outreach Program. They're a nonprofit company whose mission it is to make prescription drugs more affordable to the masses. They don't take insurance, and in many cases, your prescriptions are even cheaper than your co-pays. They carry thousands of different prescription drugs, so whatever you're taking, there's a good chance they have it. No coupons are required, and this is not a discount card. It is pure savings on your prescription drugs. They specialize in generic meds for any chronic health needs you have. Call with your prescription and find out for free how little you can pay for your prescription drugs. Remember, we don't take insurance, so call right now.
800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. That's 800-586-9885.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Well, the market doesn't have a case of the Monday. It's shaking off Friday. We're almost halfway back here. Very, very bizarre. S&P futures up 62. NASDAQ futures 454. Someday if we... 30 years from now, Jimmy, if we go back in history, we might find out the Fed's buying futures. Who the hell knows? But maybe not. Anyway, Dow futures up 137. That's the only one that's not really bouncing much. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 73.3%, FTSE up 13.1, CAC around down 10.1. So they're kind of digesting Friday and today, and we're kind of unchanged, which is interesting. Nikkei down 2,500. It's almost 4%. Hang Seng down 304, that's 1.2%. Shanghai down 68, 1.7. And we had the Korean stock market was down 8% at one point. They opened up that far down. Just as a way of Friday, S&P was down 200, so we're back, let's say, a third of that. NASDAQ was down 1,120, and we're up, 400. So we're maybe back a little more than a third there, 40%. So that's where that all is. Bonds. And these were up huge on Friday, not today. 4.53 in the 10-year. This is after the labor numbers came out somewhat mild, and which really means that the new Fed chair really is not going to be able to raise interest or lower interest rates than anybody can think of. This is a key one, though. The FX, the dollar is strong. It's against the euro. It's up, we're at 115. We've been 117, 116, now 115. That's another almost a percent. That's a lot. British pound 133, that's the lowest we've seen in that for a while. But here's a key one. The Japanese yen was over 160. Now it's 159.95. So I'm saying it's 159.95 after these guys are in buying yen with dollars. So that's not good for them. We've got gold down 10 bucks, still 43.54. They were down heavy on Friday as well. Silver down 30. Everything was down Friday except interest rates. Oil up a buck. It was up more than that. 91.59. Arbob up 4 cents, 308. So again, we're probably at the $4 mark, which you can sort of get here, 410. If you got to add a buck to that. Crypto, which you're getting hammered on Friday, is back up a little bit today, 2100, 63,420. That's something we've been watching. Yeah, Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic weather? For traffic's horrible.
Oh yeah, it's brutal out there. Currently 7:40 a.m. on June 8th, 2026. Weather, yes, 69 at O'Hare and 71 at Midway. Mostly cloudy downtown. Heavier rain early this morning, causing some traffic delays. We're still dealing with that. Today, high of 83 with likely chance of showers, then thunderstorms after 4 p.m. Tonight, low of 71 and thunderstorms likely to continue. Traffic, minor delay inbound still on inbound and outbound on the Kennedy Expressway from O'Hare to Montrose due to an earlier accident, although it's been cleaned up quite significantly. Delays also affecting traffic on the Eisenhower due to another accident. So there's another accident out there, Chief, though it's mostly affecting inbound 33 minutes from Harlem to the Jane Byrne interchange.
That was you.
It might have been.
Yeah.
Sports, yesterday for Chicago's MLB teams, Cubs lost to Giants 2-1. Cubs are 34 wins to 32 losses this season. White Sox lost against Phillies 5-9. White Sox are 34-31. This season. Both teams off tonight. Cubs back on Tuesday with the Rockies and Sox with the Braves. So I got Chief, back to you.
We have Audrey?
We do, yeah.
Hey, Aud, how are you? Happy day after birthday.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning, everybody.
Congratulations, Audrey.
Birthday.
Good morning.
Pardon me?
Congratulations. Happy birthday. Sorry,
I made it another year.
The
the older you get, the happier you are. Where you go, phew, another one.
Isn't that a good feeling? Yeah, I'm still here.
Still here. Everything still works pretty well. You know, I've been a very blessed person. I've had a wonderful life so far.
That's because of me. That because of me, or in spite of me?
We'll give you some credit.
Okay. Silence is deafening.
Silence is deafening. It is a great group you had there. Nancy was there. Di was there. Di, I mean, Audrey's friends are easily become some of your favorite people. They're great ladies, very self-starters, all have great points of view. They're all still doing stuff. I mean, Diane is special. You know, did she tell you she was going to put the arm on me about the board of Fisher House?
She should.
Oh, God. Hey, I have a question for you guys, since we're all, everybody here. Matt Byrne, please be listening on this. Mm. What, do you think we could do a little more? She asked me this. Maybe a couple of guests a week regarding veteran stuff. Maybe a couple of, she said probably a couple of people Fisher House would want to. You think we could? She says, "Why don't you turn the show into like 20% stuff for veterans? I mean, they have money too, and do you think that would that help us or hurt us? I think it would help us. What do you guys say, Matt? What do you think?
I think it'd be a great idea, and then I think that could also I think PTI should offer financial counseling for some veterans. Give them a free." Free started to some people don't know how to invest. Maybe you could do a little counseling for vets also.
Well, you know, we all have a real soft spot for the vets, so if we could help. I just never thought about it. I just kind of tossed that out to Diane. She goes, yeah, they don't have anybody to listen to in the morning. And if they like sports, they like the market, they like some of the pound. And if we could have something, even if it's a couple of short guests a week from people that specify, you know, do stuff like you know, the mental health part, this part, and even if it, you know, it doesn't overwhelm the show, I think everybody really like it. What do you think, Matt Byrne? You're a professional.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't see why not. You know, it just seems, you know, it would be a benefit to everyone involved.
Well,
and you know what? There's so many things that are involved, because even there's one arm that I also works at. There is a closet for women veterans trying to return to the workforce, where you could get clothing and things. So, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects that, you know, go back into reintegrating back into life when you come back from combat, or, you know, you've been injured. So, I think there's a lot of different things we could touch on that would help people.
Well, I don't see how we could, if we did 15 minutes 2 days a week, I don't think it would overwhelm anything else we're doing, and I think it would be pretty neat. Let's have a vote. What do you guys think?
Should I think it's all about enlarging, you know, our scope of interest and your audience. So, yeah.
I think that's an awesome idea. I think you should ask your listeners to send you some ideas for what they would like to hear, or maybe they have suggestions on a way to help.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, I'm interested by all this stuff, so it wouldn't be boring to me. I mean, I don't think.
Well, to make somebody's life better, it's always a good thing.
So, Ed, what's going on? Jan, a couple more buildings have sold downtown here. That's not really Audrey's gig, but maybe you comment on that for a second. But, Ed, what's going on kind of in your area? Very interesting yesterday with, I forget if it was Nancy or Diana was telling me about the dental guy who's got $800,000 worth of debt. And I'm thinking he's not going to be a client of yours anytime soon.
Which guy?
It was either Nancy or Diana was saying about their dentist that they've gone to forever. Has his son just joined the practice? He's got $800,000 in debt, or $700,000 or something from dental school.
That must have been Di. I did not hear that from Nancy, but we were all talking, so maybe I missed something. $800,000 in debt from dental school?
I think it's like a couple hundred grand a year, and it's 4 years. Maybe some of it was from undergrad. I don't know, but and it might have been higher. The number might have been 700, but still, it was awful high.
It's awful high. That's a lot of teeth to fix.
So anyway, earlier in the show, we were talking about how the people, and we were talking a little bit about, you know, the 50-year reunion that some of our guys are at Notre Dame, and we were saying that you had some of your clients that, I use the term, can actively compete with the people with the cash sales are usually, and boy, I can't help me, I don't want to make it, it's somebody who works as maybe as an electrician, a plumber, something for 10 years. Maybe he went to a two-year school or maybe even a four-year school, but way back of one that's less priced. And, you know, the girl he's marrying is a nurse or something, or she does something. That they actually have money. and they don't have the debt.
That is true. That's very true. And also, you know, if you're getting out of school in, you know, 18 months to 2 years and you start your income without any, basically any debt behind you, I mean, you've already started running. And yes, it's wonderful to go to school and get an advanced degree to be a doctor, whatever, but the debt you incur for many years to come, I read somewhere an article that by the time a lot of doctors actually start making money, they're like 45 years old by the time everything's done. And if you retire when you're, you know, 65, 20 years isn't really a lot to accumulate any kind of money nowadays.
Jan, what was the, when you were teaching, what is the tuition load at, you know, junior college versus what was it at Prairie State? What is it at DuPage? What is it like, what does it cost to go to nursing school at St. Xavier's? I mean, I have no idea any of these costs.
When I was at Prairie State, this is now, you know, going back 13 years, I believe you could have carry a full-time load if you were in district for around $1,500 a year to $2,000. Some programs had additional charges like lab fees if you're nursing or something else, or automotive with equipment and stuff that you know, you had to, you know, be billed for. But it was shockingly less than what you would have to pay at any state or private institution with a four-year program to get equivalent training. So that when you after paying that over 2 years, if you stuck with it, you could get a license, a certificate in your field, and be employable. And you know, often these apprenticeships can be worked out even before you graduated. So you knew you had something facing you as soon as you walked out the door, because you had been kind of mentored along the way. So if you were interested in getting it, you know, your feet right on the ground running with a salary, like you said, Audrey, it was a very good investment. It's more expensive now. And, you know, the college's enrollments have shrunk too, which kind of is disheartening for me, because I think that means a lot of people are not availing themselves of what's still a pretty good bargain, comparatively speaking.
Was that 2 years, Jan, or four?
Two.
Okay, and then after that, did what percentage of people, I'll say, went on and what didn't.
Well, yeah, the transfer rate was, the four-year institutions that used to come to the college fair at Prairie State and other places, you know, Notre Dame, well, every big-name institution was there to recruit community college students because they, and I used to talk to these people, and they had nobody at their desk or at their booth to talk to them, but they'd say, we love these students because they've already decided this is what they want to do, and they've been juggling family responsibilities and working and everything else, so they know how to succeed, and we don't have to take a chance of them learning that their first year when they're also living away from home. These are people who have, you know, matured in a way that a lot of our students never had an opportunity to. So they were gung-ho to get them. And I would say, you know, the rates of transfer were, well, maybe 50%.
When you say transfer, you mean you graduate your place and go to somewhere else for the next 2 years, or are you talking about leaving after 1 year?
Right, you leave. It's at some point where you transfer if you get some money ahead or whatever. But I would say, you know, if you graduated with a certificate at Prairie State, maybe, probably not 50%. But close to 50% of those people could transfer to four-year institutions, and I can't tell you what the completion rate for those students was, you know, how well they succeeded in their four-year programs. But to me, it was always, you know, if I had been living in a different time period and it's, you know, had, you know, the same, you know, income my parents had and so on, I would definitely have gone to a Prairie State or, you know, Olive Harvey or some other place before I ventured out into the four-year college world, because it just makes a lot more sense financially.
Because the we took your assessment to heart earlier in the show, talking about the people who actually can, you know, they don't start out in this hunk of debt, and they're actually doing stuff, and they're able to actually buy the home when they're in their early 30s. And yeah, the people I run into down here with debt and are working for, you know, FINRA or the CBO or somebody in the bureaucratic spot, there's no chance of a car or a home in their future. Pretty scary.
You know, that's a shame. Young people were sold a bill of goods, I think, in the last decade or so, that no matter what you went to school for, it was like an automatic ticket into a great job. And, you know, basket weaving was not the same as getting a degree in economics. So you also, if you didn't choose wisely, and I think that was a large part of the problem, what are you going to do when you get out with this degree?
I got news for you. As a guy with a degree in economics, nobody wants an economics guy either.
You'd be getting a degree in some type of, you know, computer AI or something. So the types of degrees that are offered to kids now didn't even exist when we were in school. But instead of the parents or the school counseling saying, you know, an apartment's going to cost you $2,000 a month, and if the job that you're getting is going to pay you $1,800 a month, you know, you're not going to be able to live. So instead of them looking for reality, they just wandered off of these strange programs. So there was no channeling directions into what are you going to do to support yourself? Is this going to be a useful part? Why are you going to school? So I think a lot of that counseling just disappeared, and then you were funded, and then you took these online classes, signed up, got yourself heavily in debt to some college, and got basically nothing out of it.
Well, I, you know, my view is there's nothing wrong with the education. What's wrong is the price.
Well, I think there's pretty useless degrees. Now, I think they've gotten away. College also used to be grounding in how to think. So you had to go through some philosophy, learn how to appreciate literature. So the purpose of college, which is to make your brain better, not just also a paycheck, has disappeared. So I think the value for what you get has gone down dramatically.
Well, I mean, you're talking to two people that have useless degrees. Mine's in economics, and John's is in, what are you, English, Jen?
Well, yours was not useless for most of your life, and it still isn't. That's not true.
Well, if I wouldn't have gone to grad school, what would I have done? Taught economics, right, Jen?
Yeah. And you would have gotten a job, too.
Yeah, I would have gotten a job.
Not anymore, maybe, but, you know, because the job market has just collapsed from across the board. The competition is so fierce because, you know, there's a surplus of people who need jobs in academia, and we're never going to get them.
Well, and it's I just think that the cost is blown out of proportion. I mean,
definitely. And it's okay. So you could almost put universities and hospitals in the same category of where is this money going? Because it's sure not going to the doctors, nurses, or teachers.
Funny you should.
So funny where is that money all going?
Funny you should mention that, Odd, because there I was minding my own business. This had to be before COVID.
Which is never true, but go ahead.
You see what you get, Jen? You're trying to be innocent here, and you can't be innocent. It was a snowy day at home, and I wasn't going to go out for my walk because there was a foot of snow. So I spent about 3 hours going through going through prices. And this is back when somehow or another I can't access a lot of this stuff anymore, but I did three things. I went from the year 2000 to the year 2022, and it might have been 2021. It was before COVID. And I looked at the prices that I was able to find versus the CPI. And I picked just what you're talking about, Odd. I had a cheat because I don't have all these numbers at the top of my head. But there was a site, and I think there still is a site. You maybe can get on it, Jack, because you're a teacher, but you could get on there, and it was a national database for colleges. Every single college, going back to before 2000, their tuition every year, out-of-state tuition, room and board. It was spectacular. I never knew there were so many colleges. There's like 100 of them in Illinois, maybe more. And so I dug it out, and I think the CPI at the time said that we were up 80% in prices from whatever I started, 2000. So I looked at college tuitions, and I got kind of a smattering and average. They were really up 285%. So they were almost up three times in that 21 years or 22 years. 285. And then I said, okay, what about insurance? Or medical care costs. But you know what? That's a quagmire. So I cheated and I said, okay, what does a firm like PTI pay for their insurance per people per month? You know, it wasn't just my firm. I went back, what does a firm pay? And from 2000 to 2021, now this is because every firm at the time, because we were doing it, the deductible got a little bigger, you know, that kind of crap, or a little less you covered, even if you're doing the best you could. Guess what the number was, Jan, in Odd? 285%. Exact same number as the increase in college tuition. Then I went one step further, and I said, okay, what about the cost of primary education? Now, that's a real problem, okay? But then again, I figured, all right, it's about 50% of everybody's tax bill, right? Give or take a few percentage points. So I went back, and I looked at Illinois property taxes. What do you think the number came out? 285%. Those three areas, exact same number, and it was like three times more, a little over three times more than the CPI. So Ed, you have no idea how correct you were in that statement, that college tuition and medical care is... Now, I think since then, the tuition numbers kind of backed off a little bit, don't you think, Jan? And the medical care numbers probably accelerated. So I think if I did...
Yeah, a lot of institutions have folded or, you know, yeah. So it's a different market now.
I'm guessing since then, the medical stuff's even worse, and probably the higher education's maybe a little better. I mean, that's my guess. I haven't redone it. Plus, I can't get into that site anymore, which is... I think they want me to pay $200 a year to get into the site now. Which brings up another question. How the hell... I get nothing but headlines. I mean, I was worried about Stacey King getting that story this morning. I probably hacked on it. I clicked on three things on my computer. I couldn't get into any one of them because I don't have a subscription to LA Times.
Well,
you've got
to pay for this. Okay, but you've got to pay to read it.
I know, but my question is, how the hell does AI get all this stuff? Do they just bust into everybody's place?
Well, that's not way out of my department.
I think it involves some sort of a handshake deal where the databases are subscribers. They have to be to have access to it. And there's some kind of, you know, influence or, you know, money that changes hands to increase the spread of whatever data you've got that, you know, you have to sell to everybody else, but you're selling it to some AI outfit too. I don't think anybody's giving this information away for nothing.
Okay, by the way, and we keep talking about inflation a little bit. I don't know if I mentioned to you, Art, but you both know, the air conditioning on the second floor of my buildings, you know, it's a long story, but you can't get the old refrigerant. So the old refrigerant's like $600 just to fire it up. And then you got to put the dye in there to find out where it's leaking. Well, then now if it's leaking, you got to, even if you fix the leak, you got to put it back in. So you're up to 1,200 plus people to do it, right? So if people get, well, you might as well just buy a new one, all right, which probably makes sense if the thing's 18 years old anyway. So I asked my guy, I go, what's a new one cost? We can put one in for about $4,500, you know, done deal. I said, okay. So the guy in the second floor tells me, I don't really care about air conditioning. Besides, I'm spending most of the winter away. So I said, all right, I'll mess with it in the spring. So I called the guy yesterday. I said, yeah, you know, I think I might need that air conditioner. Oh, yeah, well, the prices have gone up. Okay. What are we talking? Guess what the number is.
$6,500.
$6,500. No, $6,500. So what's that?
Oh, okay.
50% in 7 months?
Why? That's a
number. That's a number. Because you have no idea how much the cost of the equipment is. I'm sure he's...
It's like the stock market, though.
Well, of course, he's padding it, because now he's busy.
If you didn't get a lot of your home projects done in the last few years, you will just absolutely have sticker shock when you look at things now.
Give a couple examples, right? Because you're on this. I mean, it's unbelievable, the numbers. The people don't even know.
Windows alone are up 350% in about the last 5 years.
So if you're, any idea why?
Windows in your house.
Is it the installers with all the commercials and stuff, or is it the actual window, if you go find the window, or both?
It's both, and I think that's come to the same point that when I did a rehab last year, I hadn't done one for years, and previously you had your materials and labor. Labor was about 30 or 35%. Well, now labor is 50% pretty much, and maybe a little more in certain circumstances. So people now who are just getting estimates of work on the house or even just buying appliances, water heaters, you'll absolutely amazing at how expensive it is now. So just be prepared for that shift in values with the labor, which has just gone up dramatically.
Well, one of my guys that I talked to at the Tripoli is a retired carpenter, good character, nice guy. And Jan Lee, our normal Monday guest, I think he's off to California for kids' graduations or something, but he is trying to put a deck on. And I said, well, you know, we can work with that deck and get some people to do it. We'll go get the material. I don't want to do anything. I'm just going to get a guy. Okay, fine. So he calls me up and he goes, well, how about running me off these three estimates? And I go, okay, I got nothing better to do, but I'll do it for Jan. And so I run them off. Actually, my nephew runs them off. And I'm looking at these things, $52,000, $54,000, $56,000 for to redo a deck. Now, it's a reasonable-sized deck, but so he shows it to me. And I'm looking at it and digging it too much. The labor, it's like four guys for 3 days. The labor, they want like $38,000 or something. Wait a minute. Just like what you're saying, Art. Wait a minute. That's 16 man days. And it's since when are we paying $2,500 a guy per day, for God's sake?
I mean, you're way better off being any type of like construction, carpentry, because if you actually do the math on that and factor in the price of education, you're way ahead of the surgeon right now.
Well, yeah, so but the carpenter guy says, though, he goes, I've been out of the business. I retired for 5 years, but I still know some guys. If you pay more than $30,000 for this or 25, I'm never going to talk to you. He says to him. I mean, they see somebody with a few bucks, they just lob a bomb at you or what?
Well, I've got estimates on my deck and for a very similar renovation, it ranged from $38,000 to $100,000.
Oh my God.
So I decided I would live with my deck for another year.
That's unbelievable.
And decide what I'm going to do.
Well, the guys who took the tree down next door to us, Jen, of course, this was an unusual event because there's this massive tree on somebody's side lot, and they built the deck essentially around the tree. And this thing is huge. Then they decided, well, we better get this tree out of here before it falls on one of the houses. So the two guys split the cost of the thing. They ended up paying somebody $20,000 or something. The first estimate was $60,000. When I say the 20, though, John, I've never seen anything like it. They had this massive crane. You couldn't let any branch drop at all, or we're going to drop right on a house or a deck. And this tree was, I'm going to say the base of it had to be, 10 feet thick, no, 8 feet thick. It was that big of a tree. But it took these guys, and they're piling the stuff in front of my house, and I'm going, my God. And they did a beautiful job. For, it was like $20,000-$25,000. They had 5-6 guys and all this machinery. But $60,000? How do you quote somebody like three times more? Do you just think people are pigeons or what?
Well, they think that, you know, they also charge. You have to watch some contractors. They also charge according to what zip code. They eyeball the house and, you know, something where there's an average house value of maybe $250 versus the house.
Yeah.
You get two way different prices.
Well, both of these guys could have done the 60 easy, but still, you shouldn't have to.
Anyway, there's a reason they call themselves tree surgeons. Huh?
Yeah. So what? You're still busy? Is it cash buy to cash buy, or do you got other kind of people?
Well, you know what? I got everybody's in their house right now. My flurry of spring activity. Everybody's in something or pending closing. I have. Couple new listings coming up and a couple new buyers, but I've got a little window here where I might take a week off or so and relax a little bit.
Well, good for you.
I'm thinking about it.
You had how many people were you moving in like a month span? It was like 7 or 8, wasn't it?
Yeah, it all happened at one time, so it was a little crazy. It gets a little crazy when everything's coming together and all the paperwork is flying around and the movers and whatnot, but I've got one of that early batch coming up this Saturday. This Saturday for their close Friday. They're excited. So everybody's happy in their new home so far. That always makes me feel. It's my psychic income. I see people get the house of their dreams, and it's a really good feeling.
Well, it sure is. I mean, and it knows if you haven't figured it out. Well, it doesn't just at the closing say see and never see you again. She's helping people get rid of their stuff and move and everything else. I mean, because you become friends with all these people, which is a good thing.
One of my clients that we moved, she and her husband were clients of mine for about 25 years. I moved them 3 times, and unfortunately her wonderful husband passed away a couple of years ago, and I've been after her to get a first floor condo because she is very healthy and active, but in her early 80s, and I worried about her. And we actually did finally find a place that she's... So, first time I've seen her that happy since her husband passed. But...
Jen, her husband played...
She needs some help. She needs some help moving, because there's really, you know, so few people, family around. So, besides the movers, my friends and I had helped her, but she had some plants and a glass bookshelf she was worried about. So, Tom actually volunteered on a Sunday, and we moved her... her fragile glass shelves for her, so she didn't have to worry about it. She was very happy.
John, good for you.
John, we're riding along, and she's talking about she can't fit it in her car. A couple of her friends, I go, Odd, you're riding in a pickup. We got a pickup. We could do this. But her husband was played ball for the Pistons.
No fool.
Wow. Yeah. And real nice
guy.
One
of the nicest men I've ever met in my life.
Then he went and coached for a long time. Avid golfer. Big, huge dude. I mean, was he about 6'7"?
Great guy. He was wrote books, very interested in music. I mean, he was kind of like a little Renaissance man.
Yeah.
Wonderful
yeah.
person.
Wow.
Anyway, we got a dash, guys. S&P Futures up 61. NASDAQ Futures up 518. We'll see if this turns a broken dream here or if it's yet another bounce. Hopefully it's another bounce because some of my client stocks are back up where they would like them a lot better. Friday was not good. We'll be back tomorrow. I'll tell you all about it. Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex.
offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? F*** you. I don't want to see those returns.
Yeah.